he had certainly some spotlight on him for sure, but mm-hmm. in the grand scheme of music, he really had lots of threads throughout all the community.
I didn't realize he had been, as a young man, in The Commitments. That was a movie that was one of my favorites, and I had no idea it was Glenn Hansard.
So it was when he was in The Frames.
Okay.
In the band, and he actually was kind of upset by how the Commitments made people think that he wasn't a real musician. They thought he was an actor.
Like the Monkees.
Yeah. And he was like, no, I was in The Frames first.
Yeah. Yeah. And like kind of a fluke how he got in the movie. He was there with a friend or something and they had him read. And
I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah. I need to, Malachi was just talking about
it's
that.
It's such a fun, that must have come out when I was in college or something. And I think I had the soundtrack and it was really, really a fun movie. Coming up, we're going to have the Up North Report here on 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota, thank you for helping us out last week and for continuing to do so. If you missed our summer membership drive, donate now. You can go to KAXE.org.
Coming up, we've got more from Morning Edition, but first it is time for the Up North Report here on People Powered Radio, KAXE.
For KAXE News, I'm Emma Crabb with the Up North Report. Some entry points on the western side of the Boundary Waters reopened Wednesday. Megan Buffington spoke with an Ely canoe outfitter about the significance.
You can hear the relief in Drew Brockett's voice.
Today's a great day. Let's put it that way.
Brockett is the outfitting manager for Paragus Northwoods Company. He says outfitters have been decimated since the Boundary Waters closed 3 weeks ago. A few people chose to enjoy the woods and waters in other ways, but Paragus lost nearly all of its reservations. Brockett says they were able to save a few trips this past weekend. Entry points have been gradually reopening in the central and eastern portions of the wilderness. But most campers don't start trips to those areas from Ely.
This opening for the Fernberg Road in the Kouishewe Triangle area here was big.
The Forest Service says 4 entry points in areas directly impacted by the fires are closed through the end of the quota permit season, but more entry points could reopen. Firefighters are paddling into increasingly remote areas to fight parts of the fire they couldn't previously access because of dangerous conditions. Brockett says Paragus and other outfitters are getting contracts to pack food for the crews. Not only can they make a bit of money, but it also means work for seasonal employees who had their hours cut because of the closure. Brockett's parting message was a common refrain. Ely is open. You may still be seeing smoky photos, but he says those are outdated.
No, that is not what it's like up here. It's beautiful, you know? So if you had plans to come up here, just keep coming up here. Town would love it.
He also added that because of cancellations, you may be able to plan a rare last-minute August trip to the Boundary Waters. And if you do have a permit and can't make it, cancel it so someone else can take a trip. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
The Bacchus City Council has approved a conditional use permit for Pine Mountain Gospel Church to establish a 16-person men's recovery house in the former Bacchus School Building. The Pine and Lakes Echo Journal reports City Attorney Andrew Callis recommended approval at the Monday night meeting because of legal reasons. The city is required by state and federal laws to treat Good News Recovery Center the same as an apartment building and not condition their approval on the basis of addiction. Despite this, community members attending the meeting expressed their opposition to the center, wary of the proposed location's proximity to family homes and businesses selling alcohol. Pine Mountain Gospel pastor Kenny Holm and center founder Linnea Percifield Tilbury advocated for the center by providing details about the program's requirements. They said residents must obey a contract that bans substance use and mandates work searches and counseling commitments, among other stipulations. The church will have 2 years to complete renovations on the building. The U.S. is in the midst of another slow summer job scene for teens. For Minnesota youths, leaders in charge of combating invasive species in lakes say the work can be a game changer for career training. The DNR helps with oversight as these staffers perform visual checks and educate boaters about preventing the spread of aquatic hitchhikers that disrupt lake ecosystems. Nick Phelps leads the University of Minnesota's Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. He performed this work as a college intern.
I made some bigger college and career decisions after that experience. You know, it's not just sitting in a lawn chair at a boat ramp, but it's interacting with the public. It's a lot of experiences that are hard to replicate.
The group Minnesota Lakes and Rivers says county and tribal governments lean on state funding to send out more than 800 boat inspectors each summer. This includes older teens. The money that flows to local agencies faces a 50% cut next year amid belt tightening at the state capitol. Advocates hope the move is reversed next session. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is looking for public input on an updated fisheries management plan for Leech Lake. The plan, which was last updated in 2021, serves as a guide for the agency as it hopes to maintain a quality fishery. The public can make comments by contacting Leech Lake Management online, over the phone, or by mail up until August 20. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Emma Crabb, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06. Thanks for tuning in. It's People Powered KAXE. Coming up, we'll have more from Morning Edition, including we're learning about Senate Republicans that want to hold former top health official Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress. We'll hear more about that, along with Puerto Rico and water rationing there. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Kari Hedlund. Happy Dancing Turtle has an open house at Hunt Utilities Group Resilient Living Campus in Pine River today from 5:30 to 7. Visit the staff and see their outdoor classrooms, garden, and shop featuring hydronic systems and more.
There are so many things going on coming up at 7:20. Area Voices with Andrew DeZingle. We're learning about the latest Bemidji Symphony Orchestra performance. Also going on, Cabaret continues, Northern Lights Opera Company at the Armory Arts and Event Center in Park Rapids, and that is going on through Sunday or through Saturday, recommended for ages 12 and up.
And it is First Friday tomorrow in Grand Rapids. McCroskey Arts Center is presenting their 34th annual juried show this month and through September. The opening reception is tomorrow from 4 to 7 during the First Friday Art Walk. Find that full list of locations for the art walk at grandrapidsarts.org, and be sure to tune in tomorrow. Katie's is coming by.
Yeah.
Question mark.
I gotta confirm, but most likely.
Yes. Okay.
And continuing on in the Brainerd area, it's the 18th annual Lakes Area Music Festival through August 23rd. Top classical musicians from around the world for performances throughout North Central Minnesota. There'll be the opera Carmen, flamenco, outdoor concerts, yoga, lakesareamusic.org.
We received support from Harmony Food Co-op, Bemidji's full-service downtown grocery store, offering people a variety of local, organic, fair trade, and conventional items. Open daily from 8 to 8. More at harmonyfoods.coop. Also on Facebook.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. The Senate Homeland Security Committee is scheduled to vote this morning whether to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress. Fauci was the nation's foremost infectious disease expert during the COVID-19 pandemic. Republicans on that Senate panel want to hold him in contempt after he refused to answer their questions last week during a hearing about his pandemic-era decisions. NPR congressional reporter Eric McDaniel is covering that vote and is with us now. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Do you want to remind us of what Senate Republicans say Dr. Fauci did to provoke this?
Well, Fauci has long been targeted by those who feel frustrated by the U.S. government response to COVID. Critics who feel like they were misled by shifting guidance on masks and social distancing, frustrated by shutdowns, as well as a range of more fringe conspiracies. President Biden actually pardoned Fauci for any actions between 2014 and January 2025, the end of Biden's term, in acknowledgement of that scrutiny. Called before Congress last week, Anthony Fauci actually refused to answer questions from lawmakers by invoking his Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination, and that infuriated Libertarian Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, a longtime critic of Fauci.
You argue that you did not personally issue every lockdown order, close every school, or impose every mandate, but officials across the country invoked your authority to justify these decisions. and you presented your recommendations not as judgments open to debate, but as dictates of science itself.
Paul says to Fauci, essentially, look, you're protected by a pardon from President Biden. You shouldn't have to worry about incriminating yourself, though it's worth noting that pardon is through the end of Biden's term and wouldn't cover any congressional testimony now.
So this contempt of Congress vote, what is it?
Yeah, contempt of Congress is sort of like contempt of court. It's the legislature's tool to enforce their will where the legislature feels as though someone is obstructing their process. You've heard of judges saying, I might imprison you to compel your testimony if you're refusing to cooperate. This is basically the same idea. It isn't clear if the Department of Justice will go on to investigate Fauci over contempt of Congress or any other charges. These prosecutions are pretty rare. But many Democrats do see a risk. They point to the prosecution of other prominent past officials that Trump dislikes, including his former FBI director, James Comey.
So you cover Congress, Eric, you know, all the time. Like, what stands out to you about this committee vote happening in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, in one sense, it's actually pretty surprising to me to see Congress remember they have these oversight powers at all in an era where we see the presidency and Supreme Court exercising, you know, just unprecedented amounts of might. Congress has the unilateral power to declare war and has refused to exercise that power after Trump started the Iran war without congressional authorization. We've also seen this come into play in the appropriations process. They've declared money should be for specific purposes, and then the Trump White House has assigned it elsewhere. But I'm pretty skeptical that many Americans will see this oversight specifically as a good use of Congress's time. According to Gallup, the polling organization, 28% of Americans see economic issues of all sorts as the biggest problems facing the country right now. Another 28%, a separate 28%, see the government itself as the biggest problem. And this vote on Anthony Fauci really, I think, addresses neither.
That is NPR congressional reporter Eric McDaniel. Eric, thank you.
Thank you.
The government in Puerto Rico says it will begin rationing water this week. A severe drought is the latest in a string of problems, leaving many people's taps dry. NPR's Adrian Florido reports.
Puerto Rico has gotten so little rain this summer that key reservoirs are on the verge of empty. Speaking to reporters Tuesday, Governor Jennifer González Colón said she had no choice but to turn off the flow of water to people's homes.
Pocas veces se ha visto ese embalse en esas condiciones y si continuamos de esa manera.
We've rarely seen our reservoirs so depleted, she said, and if we continue this way, we will run out of water. Beginning Friday, about 500,000 people in parts of the capital, San Juan, and in surrounding cities will have their water cut on a rotating schedule. 48 hours with water, then 48 hours without, until reservoirs are restored. That could take a long time because forecasters don't expect significant rainfall in the weeks ahead. In Puerto Rico, people are furious.
Aguaje por aquí, aguaje por allá. Jennifer González.
Even before the drought, people were coping with water shortages for other reasons. This week, people brought empty water bottles and unwashed laundry to a protest in the capital. Nara Rivera was one of the organizers. She lives in San Juan, in a neighborhood where taps started going dry 13 months ago. She and her neighbors have kept track.
For the year, we have 123 interrupted days without water.
She spends a lot of time opening her faucet to see if anything comes out. She says it's been hard to plan her life, not knowing when she will have water and when she won't.
It changed your life. Totally. It changed your life. You know, water is essential for living, and not having is frustrating, you know, not only for myself, for my neighbors, for the animals, for the island.
For months, Rivera and a growing coalition of citizens and public interest groups have been calling for the head of the public water utility to resign. So far, he hasn't budged. Now, Rivera and her neighbors are bracing for possibly even less water than they already get.
Imagine with the rationing, it's going to get worse for us.
The problems plaguing Puerto Rico's water systems have been building for years. Experts say a primary cause is infrastructure that's not been maintained because of the island's budget problems, but also a history of corruption. Major pipes have begun to crumble. According to the government, more than half of its water supply is lost to leaky underground pipes. As Governor González Colón prepares to start rationing supply, she says she'll tap emergency funding to distribute cisterns and drinking water to affected communities with help from the National Guard. She's also said that if rain remains elusive, water cuts could become more drastic. Adrian Florido, NPR News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Later today on All Things Considered, the Trump administration is proposing major changes to the Clean Water Act, aiming to cut red tape and construction costs. Environmental groups worry it could gut protections for millions of acres of wetlands and streams. Colorado is setting up its own defense. Listen in the NPR app or on this public radio station. This is NPR News.
It is the Thursday morning show on People Powered KEXE. It includes news from National Public Radio and local stories like Area Voices coming up next with Andrew DeZingle about the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra.
Minnesota's primary election is coming up, folks. Early voting is open now, and you should go to KEXE.org. Our news team has put together a primary election guide. You can learn about those candidates running for national office, statewide office, and your local office. They did tons of work in getting information from these candidates, and that is all there for you at kaxc.org/election guide. You can also print these copies if you don't want to read it on your phone or your laptop, and also highly recommend share with your people.
Yeah, the information is there. That is one of the biggest goals that we have, is to give information to folks so that they feel like they can go to the polls. And
citizen
they can
knowledge, man.
That's right. And it's, here's the deal with the primary. So you could vote right now. It's open until the 11th as well. But it is also, you do not have to be a registered member of a party to vote. The only difference than going to the general election is that you can only vote one party, you know, privately, of course, is all voting is, on your ballots. You can't choose between parties on primary day. You can on general election day, but that's the only difference.
So go check that out. I highly encourage you to get steal yourself with information.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah. The 18th Annual Lakes Area Music Festival is going on now through August 23rd. The festival brings top classical musicians from around the world for performances throughout North Central Minnesota, including opera, flamenco, outdoor concerts, and yoga. Find out more at lakesareamusic.org. We had a conversation on that just last week, actually.
Yeah. Taylor Ward having fun. So much work going on.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yes. It's going to be mostly sunny today, 82 to 85 across the region with breezy southwest winds, 10 to 25. Tonight, mostly clear, lows 59 to 63 with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Tomorrow, Friday, sunny with highs 75 to 79 degrees.
We are looking for people to become DJs on KAXE. Community members, people from all around Minnesota. I don't think we have any non-Minnesotans currently. I mean, we have people who are snowbirds that are on the air. But you can be a DJ at KAXE. You just have to come to our training on Monday, August 24th. We've got this one at the KAXE studio in Grand Rapids from 6 to 7:30. Email volunteer at kaxe.org with any questions or just to sign up to attend. Hope to see you there.
Coming up about an hour from now, we're going to be learning about the 31st Annual Northwoods Art and Book Festival. It's this Saturday from 9 to 3 in Hackensack. More than 65 artists and 35 Minnesota authors will be at various sites throughout the town.
Coming up yet this hour, we've got Best Wishes and our KAXE News update with our summer intern and last update from our summer intern, Aaron Bowman.
My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Bemidji Symphony Orchestra's new season, Musical Escapades, begins this Saturday, August 15th at 7 p.m. at the Bemidji High School Auditorium. Today, I'm joined by the new executive director, Matea Elhard, to talk about what we can expect this upcoming season of the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra. First off, tell me, who makes up the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra?
Well, it's a huge group effort. Myself, but most importantly, our musical artistic director, Dr. Beverly Everett. Of course, all the musicians and the board members. We've got a lot of volunteers that help us out. And I would say the audience also makes up the orchestra, because that's who we perform for.
Yeah, the musicians are all volunteers, correct?
Not necessarily, no. Recently, we have been able to reimburse musicians for their time.
Oh, okay.
So that's something that we're excited about that we're able to offer. There are some that volunteer, but that's their choice. And mostly, though, we like to compensate artists.
Excellent. So how do the musicians, like, what's the process for them to join the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra?
They get a hold of our personnel manager, Gretchen Rush, and her information is on our website. So if you contact her, then she can get you set up with your spot in the orchestra.
What have we got planned for the 2026-27 season?
A lot of good stuff. Starting on Saturday, August 15th, of course, is our season opener entitled Places, People, It's Showtime. And we're bringing in a guest soloist, Emily Walter, as well as a few BSU students. That'll be a fun surprise. We're doing a bunch of Broadway hits at that concert. Then in October, we've got a John Williams, A Musical Life. So if you are a big John Williams fan or a movie music fan, that's definitely a concert not to miss. In November, we are doing our Nordic Adventures, bringing in pianist Oda Voltersvink, playing Grieg's Piano Concerto. We also will be doing a new fundraiser initiative that we've entitled the House Concerts at Concordia Language Villages, and that is going to be at the Norwegian Village, and that'll be, I think, just prior to that Nordic Adventures concert. And December, of course, is our holiday concert. We do a whole mix of all holiday music, and that's on a Sunday this year, finally. We have had to schedule it on a Tuesday, I think, in the past quite a bit, which isn't ideal, but this year, December 6th, at 3 p.m. on a Sunday, we have our holiday concert. In February, we have our classic violin solos from the big screen. That's another cinema-heavy concert. Both of our co-concert masters, Elliot Kivy and Sarah Hamron, will be playing some violin solos from all of your cinematic classics. In April, we have a really exciting concert called Join the Dance, featuring cellist Hannah Holman, and also a world premiere composition by Rebecca Burkhart. We were able to get a grant with the Bemidji Area Arts Endowment for this commission, and it's a really cool piece that is inspired by a children's book by a Canadian Ojibwe author, Richard Wagamese, and it's how animal people choose their leader. We're excited about that. Let's see, then we end our season with Fame's Bright Sky. We have another pianist, Anne Duhamel, coming in, and we'll be doing a bunch of great pieces then. Another thing to be excited for this year is we're bringing back the Bloody Mary Battle, and we'll be having that at the Loft Event Center this year.
So you just became the executive director this summer for the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra. First off, what does the executive director do?
A lot. I don't even know where to begin. It's all behind the scenes work that makes the concert go on. You know, ticket sales, publicity. We really have a volunteer board, and so I have to credit the volunteer board for all the work that they do. There's a lot of passionate individuals who have been part of the board for many, many years. And as far as I'm concerned, they're kind of leading the show. I'm just there to do the busy work of, you know, season ticket sales and handling donations, corresponding with people, just kind of connecting people, setting things up, putting pieces where they need to go. And yeah, we'll see, I guess. I've not been in the position very long, so I'm sure it'll be an adventure of figuring out what exactly I do.
But you do have a history of music, so can you tell me about kind of your past with music and what drew you to want to be part of the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra team?
I've been a musician my whole life, and I've also kind of found myself in leadership positions, you know, appointed to choir president, choir vice president, publicity manager, soprano section leader, stuff like that. And so I kind of just carried that momentum of being appointed to those positions, thinking that that's something that I could do professionally. And so I started playing with the orchestra about 10 years ago. And then about 5 years ago, I became the stage manager. And I had kind of thought about when the executive director role had become open in the past, that was something that I was interested in. I've also done a lot of clerical administrative work with the Department of Natural Resources, actually. And so I just have skills, I think, that have all kind of led me here. And it's kind of one of those things, you know, we all hear, if you find the right job, it shouldn't feel like a job. And that's exactly what this is. It's just a total passion project. And it really hasn't felt like a day of work since I've started. And so I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that there's also volunteers who aren't musicians. What do those volunteers do?
They do a lot of important stuff, distributing posters around town, talking to, you know, donor relations. There's a lot of good connections that people have in the community. You'll see them at concerts, our ushers that hand you programs, just kind of helping make people that are in the orchestra comfortable. We brainstorm. I would say they volunteer their ideas to the orchestra so we can have fun projects. And they're just willing and able to help when you ask. And it's just great. It seems like any time I've had to ask upon someone to help out with something, I have more than enough volunteers. So it's been wonderful to work with everyone so far.
The Bemidji Symphony Orchestra has become sort of a staple of the Bemidji area. What do you think it is about that has not only inspired local musicians to take part in, but people who aren't even musicians who want to help something like this succeed? What is it about it that drives such passion in people?
I think it's exciting to be part of something that's big. And, you know, an orchestra, you can recognize the work that goes into that with all the rehearsals, and the graphic designer makes a very beautiful art out of all of our publicity, which I'm a huge fan of. And I think it's just exciting to be part of the experience of the orchestra, and that's something that I'm hoping to really help the orchestra grow in, is creating an experience of attending the orchestra. And I think live music is something, as you know, is just something to really be cherished and not necessarily, I don't know. I think it's really a nice, grounding, calming experience to attend an orchestra concert, but it can also be very invigorating and stimulating. You know, once you're actually there, some people might have this idea that classical music can be boring, but I would argue the opposite. You know, your imagination can totally run wild when you're sitting in a concert and not distracted by anything else. I think it's just a really healthy headspace to be in, and I hope that people really understand that and cherish that. And if they haven't been to an orchestra concert, knowing that that's what you get for your ticket price, you really get an experience that is like none other. And I think it's just nice to support, you know, your friends and your family, your neighbors, your coworkers. There's so many different people in the orchestra as musicians. You know, they're not necessarily full-time musicians. They've got jobs at banks and schools and wherever else people work. So I think it's just fun for people to come see their friends, family, and neighbors. And
it's so neat going to shows like these and seeing like, hey, I know that person and that yeah. person and that person and that person. And like, I had no idea that they played this instrument and at this level too.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times people will say, I recognize you from somewhere. And I say, well, I'm in the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra. Oh, you're the person that runs around in the back playing all the instruments. And yeah, that's where you know me from. And so it's kind of fun.
As an executive director, do you have other goals that you're hoping to reach as, you know, now being the person in charge?
Well, I would argue I'm not necessarily in charge. I think, you know, this really is an art project that our music director is at the helm of. I'm just more of a supporting role. So I want to be able to take everyone else's ideas and see what we can do, all the nitty-gritty details to get those ideas accomplished. I guess I'm really in a position right now. I want to listen and learn and absorb as much as I can. Despite having been involved with the orchestra for about 10 years, I still think there's a lot to learn. And I want to make sure that we have a good, strong foundation to be able to make all those dreams come true. I don't think that we could move forward and grow unless we know we're stronger in certain areas. So I want to make sure that we're just really strong in the basic areas of any organization that can set us up for success.
And I suppose you had to go with the wheels already running, having joined just months before the first performance.
Yes. It's been really, I've been thrown to the wolves, as they say. But I'm super grateful for our previous executive director, Katie Lutz. She's been on board, and she'll be on board until the first concert to kind of guide me through the process. And yeah, it's a very busy time of year setting up the new season. But I've had a very supportive board. And like I said, the volunteers and Katie and everyone's just been so helpful getting me set up to where I need to be. And yeah, it's been really fun. It's been really exciting and lots going on. I think I'll have a little more time to breathe later on this winter once we've got everything going. But right now I'm just enjoying all the excitement of it all.
Where can people get tickets for the upcoming performances?
They can get tickets. Of course, they're always available at the door. And then we sell tickets out of Lucan's Village Foods. And we've got an office space here, too, downtown. So you can always buy tickets just right at the office. However, I would say the most popular route is you can mail in a check with our season ticket package, kind of our mailer that we mail out to regular attendees. And you can also go online to our website, and that's a really easy and popular way to buy the tickets. I just think it's a really good time to check out the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra if you haven't or if it's been a while. I think there's always exciting things. I think there's new musicians coming in all the time. Like you said, all these different guest artists are great to check out. And truly, I think being able to sit at an orchestra concert for, you know, an hour of your day and just calm down and really get into the music and not be distracted, have a focused listening session to music, I think can really change you. It could be a life-changing experience. I truly think that if you haven't had a chance to check out the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra live here at the Bemidji High School, that's something you should put on your calendar. So I hope to see a lot of new people at the orchestra, and all the returning audience members, of course, is wonderful to see. And I'm just grateful for everyone who is a fan and who continues to support us.
Mattea Elhart has been my guest today. The first show of the Bemidji Symphony Orchestra season will be this Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Bemidji High School Auditorium. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
You can catch up on Area Voices artist conversations at our website, kaxc.org. We rely on you to tell us about what's going on in your community as well. You can text in this morning, 218-326-1234. At 7:31, it's the Thursday morning show.
You can learn more about Minnesota's scientific and natural areas during a program at Itasca State Park tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Meet at the amphitheater and the picnic grounds to learn what this program does and where you can go within the state to discover unique species and geologic features.
Coming up this Sunday, the Brainerd Ski Loons have their free show at 5 p.m. at Lum Park. Their final show of the season will be Wednesday, August 12th at 6:30, also at Lum Park. Bring your own blanket or chair.
Are you a local business owner? You can have an impact on the future of KAXE and keep People Powered Radio strong with your sponsorship dollars. Visit kaxe.org/give to learn. Gosh dang it, I do this wrong every time. Visit kaxe.org/give to learn about sponsorship opportunities. A big thank you to all of our current business sponsors.
Today, it is looking like a lovely summer day.
A little warmer today.
Yeah, 82 to 85, mostly sunny. Southwest winds up to 25 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear with lows 59 to 63. And it looks like sunny on Friday, 75 to 79 with evening temperatures 50 to 54 degrees. Yesterday, I was having one of those days. It was cool in our house. There was such nice breeze coming in. And then it's shaded, and so I assumed it was much cooler. And then when I went in town, suddenly so hot.
The tar jungle of Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Get on the freeway with the clover leaves and the overpasses. You bet.
Coming up at 9 o'clock today, you've got Headwaters. I'm your host today. You'll also be able to hear the latest Spin That-ish with a special guest this week, Jennifer Barr. Also at 1 o'clock, you're on the river with your host, Judy Gruey. I think it's time for best wishes right now. It's the time each morning where we wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Have a couple anniversaries. One from, didn't know Coldplay frontman was our...
And he's been married for longer than we assumed.
And lives in Ten Strike. Neil and Chris Martin celebrating 38 years from Ten Strike today.
They think we're so funny. 55 years of marriage. Happy anniversary to our friends Diane and Steve Norland from Pine River.
We think we're funny. Uh-huh. That's the thing. Jeff and Cindy Wiebe having an anniversary from Hines.
Saul Roach is 21 today from Cook. Happy birthday to you, Saul.
Saul, that's a good name. Mm-hmm. Michael O'Grady turns 71 today from Hines. Whoa, we have two Hines, Minnesota birthday celebrations today, rather.
There you go. Maren Carter is 32 today. Happy birthday to you, Maren.
And Matt Ditmore celebrating a birthday from Boston.
Happy birthday and happy anniversary. We're going to listen to new music from Allison Russell. Now, Kari, I might be off on this, but Rainbows, her song here on the new album.
Okay, in Rainbows. Yeah, Rainbows. Yes, that's right.
The beginning of it reminds me of the Reading Rainbow theme song.
Reading Rainbow? Okay, play it for me. I got to see. I haven't...
Oh, not the Reading Rainbow song. Okay.
I mean, or do you have the Reading Rainbow song cue?
I do not, so I look nervous. This is... See what you think.
I will.
Feel it. Magic's only magic if you believe it. Did you sew that horn on your pony's forehead? Stars on the ceiling up above your bed. I can sing you words and words and words. Baby, don't trust us mockingbirds. You wanna get big when you attempt. The thunder made your head stand up on it. When the sun comes out and it's raining too. All right, yeah, all right. Remember all the stories that you used to tell to strangers in the park when you were scared. Old willow tree bowed ahead, held you in her branches till you felt better. Ducks on the pond as twilight fell. Too many secrets you can't tell. You wanna get back when you were 12. Cicadas sang love songs in the day. Rainbows, rainbows, rainbows. When the sun comes out and it's raining too. Alright, yeah, alright.
It's not easy sometimes to keep all seven colors in your mind. You gotta try, you gotta try.
Hear it.
In a book.
Take a look. I wonder, you know, next time we talk to Allison, we'll have to ask.
Okay.
I didn't hear that question on Shiro's last weekend when Carmel Holt was interviewing her, so.
Well, it's what I would have asked her, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up with Reading Rainbows?
I think.
Reading Rainbow.
Susan from Cotton says it definitely sounds like Reading Rainbow theme song.
I mean, I
put that in your head, so.
Right,
you know.
But I could also see an artist like Allison Russell making that tie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Being influenced in, you know, as she grew up too, by LeVar Burton and The Loveliness.
Yeah.
Did
they get it in Canada?
Probably. They love the U.S. stuff, don't they? In Canada?
I mean. They used to.
I know.
Yes, I that was like a special, like a Friday treat when I was in like second and third grade. Was getting to watch Reading Rainbow in school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking to see when Reading Rainbow started. 1983. So I was a little old. Not old, but
right.
I wasn't a little
kid. You weren't the target demographic.
No, but I do remember sometimes watching it and loving LeVar.
So it was on for 21 years.
Huh.
Wow. And they're bringing it back. Or they've brought it back.
Nice.
I can't remember the name of the new host, but it's good. You're listening to People Powered Radio, KAXE. Coming up, we've got a check-in with our news team. Our summer intern is wrapping up her time at KAXE. So we'll be checking in one last time with Erin. And then next hour, we have a conversation about the Northwoods Art and Book Festival in Hackensack.
Susan from Cotton says, I only know that because baby sister Margaret used to watch it. I'm way too old. She's 5 years younger.
You are listening to, like I said, People Powered Radio, where we receive support from you. We are People Powered, and we had our summer member drive last week. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support, became a new member, increased their membership. It's never too late to do that. Those member drives are just the best time for us to really shout from the rooftops about what we do. But you can become a member anytime. Go to KAXE.org. Also want to thank our business supporters like Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, more at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
And we have been hearing from some folks that said they missed our membership drive last week, and we want to thank everybody who was there for us, especially those folks who put those matches on the table to make it even more successful. This is how it happens that KAXE is here. It's because people donate, and your support makes it all possible. So thank you so much for that. Go to KAXE.org to find more information.
And if you're wondering how Susan from Cotton was messaging us and we were getting these live messages on the radio, it's this crazy technology called texting.
What?
And you can text us anytime, 218-326-1234.
Right now it's time for our Daily Dose of Phenology with John Latimer.
On today's date, August 6th, in the year 2013, a horse chestnut that I have been observing for many, many years along the river road has just begun to take on the first blush of fall. Yeah, I know, it seems awfully early for signs of fall, but the horse chestnut is one of those trees that likes to get all the color it can as quickly as it can. It begins with a light blush of red, and it will continue to heighten that color until finally the whole tree looks like an apple. And it looks like an apple because the architecture of the horse chestnut is a rather rounded shape. They don't grow up in a vertical fashion. They tend to grow out in a nice, evenly rounded shape. And so as they progress along into the fall, you will see these bright red, and some turn yellow. Some are yellow and some are red, but they become these large globular color balls that heighten fall.
That is IRL from Devin Gilfillian. And I just saw this post where he's arguing with his label because he wants to invite a local person to every single one of his shows because people have been submitting them playing the song. It's IRL in real life. And so he wants to invite a musician, a local musician, at all of his shows to come up and play with him for that song.
Wow.
And his label's like, this is a disaster. This is a logistics nightmare. And he's like, I'm doing it.
Wow. Laura's listening in. She said, great song, a dancing out the door song.
That's right. Though we really should have picked a song about heat and sweating. Because Aaron Bowman is joining us right
Wow,
now.
What do you mean?
Well, I'll get to it.
All right.
It is time to check in with our KAXE newsroom. Aaron Bowman has been our summer intern from Report for Minnesota through the University of Minnesota Hubbard School of Journalism. And Aaron, you're joining us your last few days here at KAXE. But this whole summer, we were without AC for most of it. And we had lots of hot air blowing around here. I mean, we always have a lot of hot air here, but
yeah.
Extra.
It was definitely a hot summer, but that's okay.
Okay.
It made it through.
Probably a weird thing with the extra noise. Normally in a new setting, you can spend time just listening in on what's going on and get a feel for it, but it was hard to hear.
I got to hear the radio for the first week. So I started off
hearing
being able to hear, okay. No AC, but then we got temporary AC and I couldn't hear, but yeah. I get to hear to end it all. So
there we go.
Full circle.
Yes,
there we go.
That's right. Well, it's been lovely having you here so far, Aaron. We'll see how the next 2 days go, but yeah. I could really throw that all out.
I'm going to tank it.
Yeah.
We'll just.
Let's start with this last story that you've just published yesterday about a new monument.
Yeah.
It's outside of White Oak Casino.
It's outside of White Oak Casino. It honors Helen Bryan, who was a Leech Lake member, and she was part of this historic Supreme Court case that went all the way from Itasca County to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is a really big deal.
Yeah.
And it kind of was one of, or really the first case that started off tribal gaming as we know it today.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that originated. I mean, reading through your story, it's like I had no idea that it originated here.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it also was fully litigated, or it started litigation with just the local legal aid. And they helped it all the way through up to the Supreme Court, which is another crazy thing to kind of think about nowadays. Mm-hmm. But it's yeah. Very cool story.
Is this a story that it was just assigned to you from Chelsea, or how did you guys find out about this?
Yeah, it kind of came up a few weeks ago that they had made this monument and that it might be something interesting, kind of like peek into it. And so as I was reading up about the case, I was like, no, this is like a really important wow. case and just something that people need to know about, mm-hmm. that this is such a local impact that has happened.
So that's at the White Oak Casino in Deer River. You can find that story at KAXE.org. It's our lead story at the moment.
And we want to ask you about some of the specific stories, but also just kind of the behind the scenes here. So one of the things the news team works on as a team is putting together the Up North report. What's that been like for you? Can you kind of describe how that happens during a day?
Yeah, it was something I wasn't used to or kind of had no experience going into. So it was interesting to start off with, but it's a 5-minute thing, but it takes a lot longer than you would think mm-hmm. a 5-minute mm-hmm. cast takes. So we start in the morning just kind of with a list of potential things we want to put on, but it's constantly changing throughout the day as news happens, as we realize certain things maybe will take longer to get and we want more sources, so it might get pushed to the next day, but we kind of go in with that list, and as the day is changing, we figure out the stories, get them written as soon as possible, hopefully, and we record it. It's definitely stressful sometimes, depending on when stories are getting in mm-hmm. from everyone, because we're all contributing to it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all not every day, but like do a story for it. And so sometimes it's getting submitted at 5:20 when it goes on air at 5:30, which is stressful, but it also is during those times. It's really cool to see the whole team kind of be there and being like, everyone's checking in, being like, what can we do? What can we do? Nice. And it always gets to the finish line.
How about that audio component? Because you come from written, mm-hmm. you know, and was that a challenge for you?
Definitely at first. It was kind of, you have to like get over, I feel like I had to get over the hump of being like, you just have to lean into the radio voice. You can't,
yes. yeah.
you can't like try and pretend that you're too cool for it. And so I remember Megan was here one day and she was like, we need to get your radio voice. And she made me listen to some NPR right before I recorded one. And then that one, I remember she's like, okay, you found it. This is, yeah, this wow. is better. And so kind of getting over that and just being like, this, you're on radio, so
lean into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of radio in this experience you've had?
It's been great. It's definitely different. There's a lot of things that I've love about now audio. You get to actually hear, you get to bring in people's voices mm-hmm. in a way that you do not get to in written. You can put a quote from them, but you don't get to hear their same inflections and yeah. same personality. And so yeah. that's been super fun. And I mean, just like this experience has been great, getting to work alongside so many great people and getting to tell really cool stories and be a part of such a cool community.
And you got outside Grand Rapids, you know, up the Iron Range and into the Boundary Waters. You helped cover one of the stories, particularly when the fires were raging up there with Lori Schall. Can you talk about that experience, what that was like for you?
Yeah, me and Lori went up for the first time they invited media in. And so we got to go see some sprinkler systems and talk to some firefighters. And then she was able to go up. We kind of were the ones who, at that, we asked, we were like, can we see the planes? And they were like, we can set that up. And so the next week, Lori got to head up and take some really amazing photos of some seaplanes. They're so good.
If you haven't seen the pictures yet, you can find them. They're on our social media, but they're also on KAXE.org. Lori, shout out. Such good photos.
Yeah, there's one of the kind of the in the foreground are two firefighters that are kind of blurry, and then the background of the plane coming in. Obviously, Boundary Waters with the woods, and you can see the smoke. And I mean, yeah. it's a great photo. What's it like being out there in the field like that and doing? I mean, that's a huge story you were up there covering. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's definitely different than kind of the other half of journalism, which is just sitting behind a desk and writing. But it's really great to actually get to be out there, experience things yourself, ask questions, speak to people who are actually there and doing the things. There's only so much that you can learn about things from behind a desk and from just calling people. And so getting to experience, especially with Lori, getting to see her work mm-hmm. and like all of the fancy, just getting to see her like roam and take photos was super, super cool.
So Erin, you're heading back to college. What, and maybe this might be a hard question, maybe you still have things to process after this summer, but it has the summer changed your idea on what you're interested in, or is it just reaffirmed what path you were headed on, or, you know, how has this impacted what you hope for your career?
I definitely think it's reaffirmed that I do like journalism and that is what I want to do. But I think it's also, I think the biggest thing I'm taking away from this summer is just the community aspect and how it's been like my favorite part of being here, other than actually talking to people and working on stories, has been getting to see how much care goes into journalism and how much our station and just like everyone here really cares about the community, getting to be behind decisions, getting to hear how the newsroom talks about how they're going to cover stories and stuff in a way that really isn't, it's not about how how fast can we get the story up, or, you know, can we do this for the good of, or it's really just kind of how can we do this story in the best way for the community. Mm. And so I think sometimes that can get lost in journalism, and you'll hear about kind of what story will get the most clicks and things. And so getting to see that there are people who really care, and kind of, I really hope to bring that with, of just making sure that the people I'm writing for, that's who I have
in mind. Yeah.
Well, and you're here in a big political time as well, and you guys worked really hard on that primary election guide, and the rest of the team will be changing that up once the primaries happen next Tuesday. What was that like for you?
I think you can see election guides and you can be like, oh, they're just like little answers they just put in, but seeing truly how much work, and I mean, I only helped out with a little piece of it, so just thinking about how much work Megan and Chelsea have already put in, and that's just for the primary guide, and we're ramping back up for the general election and how much work that's going to be. But at the same time, getting to hear, we've had people come in to the station and just really engage with it and talk about how important it is. So it's been really cool to see people really see your work and mm-hmm. be like, this is important. And despite how long it takes.
Yeah. Well, because journalism is, you know, even any kind of journalism is a little bit like radio, in that you don't always get to see that impact. People are reading these things on their own or in mm-hmm. their own home. And so it's not something that you visually get to see. So yeah, I haven't thought about that, getting to meet the people who are consuming what you're producing.
Mm-hmm. What's it been like as you've met people in the community and you tell them you work at KXE? Sometimes people have no idea what KXE is, but I suspect you've had some other interactions as well.
Yeah. Folks. People have always just been like, oh, that's super cool. Like radio, they're always, sometimes you have to explain radio, but just kind of, I think the concept of working at a radio station people find really cool, which has been fun. Even just like, my parents, telling my parents about it, and they'll be like, wow, right? Like, mm-hmm. People definitely find it cool.
So Erin, you are a runner, and you've been exploring some of the trails up here, and you're new to this part of northern Minnesota. What nature-wise have you taken away from this area?
I just keep, as I'm like, oh, I'm leaving, I'm going to miss my Mesabi Trail runs. Those have been... I'm just like, I think